as I wait, heart of God.
Hello, new life, and welcome to the Growth Group podcast, where we believe that spiritual growth happens better in circles than it does in rows. My name is David Haken, and I'm joined by Jonathan Markham, the pastor of New Life Christian Fellowship here in Pacifica, California. And we record these podcasts to help you get the most out of your small group discussion each week. This week, we're continuing our series in Deuteronomy under the title of The Bible Jesus Read, a book of the Old Testament that Jesus liked a lot. You might even say it was his favorite book of the Bible based on how many times he quoted it and in what significant situations of his life and ministry he quoted and looked to the book of Deuteronomy. This week, we're in our third session in this series, looking at Deuteronomy chapter 4, kind of when Moses starts preaching. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yes, he does. I think, you know, obviously he was teaching last week in chapters 1 to 3, but you almost feel like when he begins in chapter 4, he opens the chapter with, "And now, Israel, listen carefully."
Yeah.
It's like, because we were told right at the beginning, if you remember, that he is going to expound the law. He's not just going to read it.
Right.
And you almost feel like, okay, I told you, given you all the background, now some exposition. I mean, I'm sure that the division is not as strict as that, but that's what it almost feels like as you go into this chapter.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how Moses the preacher structures his sermon. Although, you know, scholars might tell us that the book of Deuteronomy is actually composed of three different sermons, I think is probably the most common consensus.
Yeah.
But interesting to think just what pieces of this book were actual sound bites from that time. Let's look at our first question, which uses a tagline that Moses will use frequently throughout this sermon. It's called, "Be Careful."
Which is, of course, the title of the sermon.
Oh, which, imagine that. The book of Deuteronomy is a sermon and therefore loaded not just with theological truths, but with explicit exhortations, admonitions, entreaties, pleas to put into practice the ways of God. One of Moses' most common pleas in Deuteronomy is to be careful or to take care. It occurs 35 times at least in the book. Read through a handful of these examples, and what does it mean to be careful? And what does it mean not to be careful? Do you have familiarity with both?
Yes, one of the things that we're going to discover as I alluded to last week and again this week is that there are a number of things that Moses repeats over and over again. And, you know, being a preacher, I recognize that there are times when you have to repeat. They tell you, sort of, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them.
Right, right.
There are things that we need to repeat for emphasis, so that if we take that thought that Moses repeats for emphasis, that it's clear that we begin to see how incredibly important he thought it was, and how much he thought that this was going to be hard for them, that they would find it difficult.
It's much easier not to pay attention not to take care.
And he uses, though we don't use it, the NLT, which is the one I use principally to preach from, doesn't actually use this phrase, but in verse 9 it says, "Watch out, be careful never to forget what you have seen. Do not let these memories escape from your mind." I like the way the NIV puts it when it says, slip out of your mind.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy for things to slip out without us even...
Right, it's a passive thing. We're not intentionally forgetting
It's not, I'm going to forget that. It's just that there are so many things happening...
Crowding it out.
That these things get crowded out. And Moses, again, says, be careful. Don't let this happen.
So, in your mind, what does it mean to be careful in a spiritual context?
I know this is a bit of a buzzword these days, but it's intentionally remembering. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I am not going to make that decision.
So it's related to memory, to drawing back what is true.
And I'm not going to make that decision without sitting down and spending some time with God and with my Bible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that because I need to take care to it. I mean, when we're very careful about something, when we're careful about a piece of china, we place it carefully in a safe place. If we're going to follow Jesus, we need to see those decisions that we make held carefully.
Do
in a
we
safe
guard
place.
Our time in the same way that we guard our fine china?
Right.
Mm. Mm. Well, Deuteronomy is full, just loaded with quotable passages, isn't it? Wonderful passages that are so meaningful and also beautifully expressed.
Right.
And one of my favorite in the book of Deuteronomy is here in chapter 4, just a couple verses long, 6 through 8. And that's what our next question is about. The question is called Mission to the Nations. God's elect nation, Israel, was commissioned with a come-and-see ministry, that by their worship and the witness of their covenant obedience, all nations would be drawn to God through them. Take a closer look at Deuteronomy 4, 5-8. Together with your growth group, try to imagine a scenario in which this interaction between Israel and the nations would take place. Does the evangelistic method prescribed here for Israel work today? How have you seen it do so? Maybe we should read some of those verses, don't you think, kind of give our listeners some context?
Yes, I mean, verse 6, did you begin at verse 6? It says, obey them. Okay, verse 5, let's start at verse 5. Lord, I now teach you these decrees and regulations, just as the Lord my God commanded me, so that you may obey them in the land you are about to enter and occupy. Obey them completely, and you will display your wisdom and intelligence among the surrounding nations. When they hear all these decrees, they will exclaim, how wise and prudent are the people of this nation. For what nation has a God as near to them as the Lord our God is near to us whenever we call upon him? What great nation has decrees and regulations as righteous and fair as this body of instructions that I'm giving you today? It's interesting the question you ask. I mean, does this happen today? I think the answer is it could.
I mean, imagine a community of spirit-filled people who are walking by the Spirit in complete love of neighbor, thinking more about others than they think about themselves. All those exhortations that Paul lays out in his letters, like if we were fully committed to those, if the Spirit and God himself worked in our life that kind of fruit of the Spirit, I think we would have that same visible effect. And I think that we are having that same visible effect in different pockets throughout the Christian world.
I mean, I remember an amazing story that perhaps I will have told in the sermon, but it's because it's a good story and it bears repeating, about the fact that there was a church that, I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, but I think that there was a shopping complex, a mall, where many of the, I think it may have been a fire or it may have been, there was devastation. And the leaders of this church went to the mall and said, you know, what can we do to help you? And they said something about, well, insurance covers this, 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 and this. But then there's all of these workers who would normally have been paid, who are now, there has nothing for them. And the church took on those people for a period of time and bridged them, in a sense, back to when they could get back to the normal life. Now, then, when it came to Christmas time, the mall opened their doors to this church to do some work and offer them space to wrap presents and do some really engaging sort of what would be termed evangelism. And bunches of atheists groups protested violently, violently, and said, you know, why, you know, you can't do this. And they turned around and said, look, when we were in real need, these people were there. So you weren't there. Mm-hmm. These people were there. And so we'll do anything we can to help them.
They've won an audience among us.
Right.
We trust them.
And I think that is exactly here. What, you know, what how wise and prudent. Obey them completely, which is what the people did. And you will display your wisdom and intelligence. Mm-hmm. And people will say, what sort of a God do these people serve?
Makes you want to go back and study the law and see, well, all right, if Moses and God through Moses is saying that this is a wise law, what's so wise about it? Let me learn. But we'll have a chance to do that in a few weeks. We should move on to our third question about idolatry, a subject which is addressed at length in this chapter. It's called The Danger of Idolatry. And it's borrowed, at least in part, from Michael Patton. What's his first name?
Michael Patton.
Michael Patton, that's it. God permits Israel to see many things. The phrase, your eyes have seen, is repeated all over Deuteronomy. But he does not let them see himself. God's refusal to be seen and his refusal to be represented by visible things, i.e. idolatry, teaches Israel they must not worship the things they can see. Where are we vulnerable to this idolatry, a worship of things seen?
The simple answer to that question, I think, David, is everywhere. It is so much easier to engage with something that you've seen, something you can visualize, yeah. And yet, whenever we put something we can visualize in the place of God, we diminish him inordinately. He becomes something so containable, which of course he never is. He's completely uncontainable. Mm-hmm.
Heavens and the highest heaven cannot contain.
Yeah, and give him something, compare him to anything you can see, and it's just inadequate. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand the whole iconography of the Eastern, in as much as I think that pictures can help you, can focus your attention. But once you begin idolatry, it's when you start saying, this is what God's like.
Right.
This is what God looks like. This is what God... This is
the images have a declarative function.
Yes. And of course, you know, this is exactly what Paul talks about in Romans chapter 1, when he says, you've exchanged it for worshipping the created rather than the creator.
Yeah, that's a really good connection. Our last question addresses a favorite subject of mine, eschatology, things that will happen in the future. And that's why we've entitled this question, The End from the Beginning, because that is what God knows. Israel's whole history is contained within Moses' warning, Deuteronomy 4, 25 to 31. Given Israel's missionary relationship to the nations discussed above, why is the judgment threatened in Deuteronomy 4 especially necessary? And yet, how does this passage balance just judgment with mercy? And how is Israel and believers today to enter into this mercy?
Well, I think it's particularly true in our culture today, where people draw these false dichotomies between the God of the Old Testament, who is wrathful and, you know, angry and all of those sorts of things, and the God of the New Testament, who's loving and all of those sorts of things. And
they've made a Swiss cheese of both Testaments.
Yeah, it's a complete straw man. It's totally, because actually, when you look at, we hear more about the judgment in the New Testament than we do about the Old Testament.
Especially from the lips of Jesus.
Yes, especially from the lips of Jesus. You're absolutely right. He talks more about hell than anybody else.
Figure. Yeah.
But I think that it's really important if we're to get, and one of the things that I think that Moses is really trying to teach the people of Israel is, what is this God like? Because really the issue for them is not, like it is for some people, that does God exist? It's, what is God like? And to paint a picture of God who was a rescuer, a provider, a lover, all of those things, but to paint that picture without the reality of his justice and his righteousness is a completely distorted picture. And so it's really important for Moses to point out to these people that God has made this amazing covenant with you. The blessings are incredible. But if you renege on the covenant, there will be judgment.
Right, and as the question implies, to renege on the covenant is a public action taking place before the watching world.
Everybody can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and tragically, I mean, it's, you almost feel through this, through the whole of this this book that Moses, there is an edge of the prophetic in what Moses says, because so many of the things that he predict or he talks about or warns against,
this could happen, this will happen,
this did happen. And so, you know, that's, I think that's why so many of these things are so important,
and probably why a lot of liberal scholars would want to date the book of Deuteronomy late, because they're like, oh, how could Moses have known?
Right.
Well, with the prophetic word of God, that's certainly understandable.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, well, next week we have some crucial things to cover in Deuteronomy, the Ten Commandments and the Shema. Really looking forward to next week.
Yes, we do. We move sort of, we're gradually moving into from the general to the more specific.
Right.
And we have the next stage of specific we
specificity,
get to next week.
Yeah.
Specificity we get next week, and then the week after that, the week after that, Christmas is coming, and then as you begin after that, we get more specific.
Right, right.
And so it's
Interestingly, with more specificity in Deuteronomy, there is more confusion on our part living 3,500 years later.
Right.
But that's what we're here for. We're going to figure it all out together, and it's a book inspired by God, and the Spirit will help us understand it and benefit from it.
Absolutely.
We'll see you then.
As I wait, heart of God.